everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Bias Check-In.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of our SWAM speaker series with one of our trend champions. Spoiled it a little bit, but Susie, who are we checking in with?
Today, we are checking with Dr. Stacy Boyle. She's the trend number 10 champion for virtual learning. She did her BA in psychology, her master's in psychometrics, and her PhD in applied behavioral studies from Oklahoma State University. She was also awarded the NASA fellowship. And today she is the author of Be More Strategic in Business. Welcome, Dr. Boyle.
Thanks, ladies, Claudia and Susanna. I'm happy to be here today. I'm thrilled to talk to your audience. I think I've got a lot to share with the number 10 trend for PSYOP.
Absolutely. So let's go right into it. Why are you interested in virtual learning? What do we have to learn about virtual learning still?
Well, there's a lot to learn. So let me start by saying this. So let's think about, virtual learning was the number 10 most requested trend from PSYOP members. And when you think about what virtual learning is, right, really what people are saying they need to know about is skilling. Because the purpose of learning and any L&D function, right, is to skill the organization and to be sure that their workforce is empowered and powered to drive. So virtual learning really is like a subsection of the corporate strategy. And part of executing the strategy is upskilling the team and being sure you hire skilled professionals for your workforce. So we'll talk about virtual learning, but just know that really the topic is about skilling, and we're going to talk about skilling as well today too. So that's what we really want to focus on. The virtual learning piece is just the how of how we get to the skilling part of the corporate strategy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. We think so.
So you mentioned skilling, the ability for employers and organizations to bring their workforce to the level where they need to be and to keep building their know-how. Let's dispel a myth. Aren't we all ready to enter the workforce perfectly once we finish our degrees and get our certificates?
Well, you know, we may be ready to enter the workforce, but is the workforce ready for us to enter it? That's the question, right? So organizations, in order to execute their strategy, they need certain skill sets, right? And now with, you know, just the world of change and everything changing so rapidly, the skill sets that organizations need to execute their strategy changes very quickly as well, right? So you might have a skill set today and, you know, when you're working in an organization and they're going through a big data transformation and all of a sudden we need more data analysts. We need people that have skill sets and BI, business intelligence, you know, data reporting, data interpretation, storytelling, for instance. And you as a learner or as an employee may have some of those skill sets, but you may not have all of it. So in order to close that gap, the organization will, one, have to either upskill certain people, reskill certain people, or hire, right? Because they know what they need for their business. So that's how the business will now needs to focus on skilling, and businesses need to understand where they have certain skill sets in the organization and where they have gaps. And so that's where learning and training come in, is closing those strategic skills gaps for organizations. So that's the big trend right now, is skilling, and using virtual learning is just a part of a broader skilling initiative, as a matter of fact.
So for people starting out or changing their career path, do you recommend having more of that learner mentality of, I may not know everything, but I will learn the skills that in this job that I'm applying for?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going in with a growth mindset, right? Understanding that you don't know everything, you know, and it's really interesting because I don't know if you guys are familiar. Have you heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect? You know what that is?
Is it? Well, now I may be proving it right if it is what I think it is. Isn't it the part where we assume we know more than we do? And so we're very confident, the least we know, the more confident we are in those three notions we hold dear.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'll give you a little personal story about that, right? So when I was 29 years old, I got my PhD, and trust me, the Dunning-Kruger effect was in high effect at that time. Little did I know it, but I thought I was awesome. I thought I was the smartest person in the room. I didn't think I was the smartest person in the room. I pretty much knew I was the smartest person in the room, no matter where I went. So this ego was like humongous, right? I'm 29 years old, had my PhD, super excited. I go get my first job at the time it was called Anderson Consulting. Now it's called Accenture. So you can tell that was back in the day, right? And first I was there for 6 months and I get my first performance review and I got a bad performance review. And I tell this story at the beginning of my book, and I got a poor performance review because they said, people don't like meeting with you. You get into the meetings, you get into the weeds, you talk over their heads, they don't understand what you're talking about, and you can't explain things to people correctly, and you have a poor communication style. So I was in shock because I thought I was killing it, and I thought people really liked working with me. So I lacked self-awareness, I lacked emotional intelligence, I lacked a lot, right? But I didn't know I lacked all that. So Dunning-Kruger effect was there, and I've seen it with new graduates, new PhD graduates, because they're so excited. And I think that's what we need to really chalk it up to, is being so excited about that well-earned degree that they've worked hard for and spent a lot of time and money on. But I think some self-awareness at that time in your life is really important, and it can take you far and realize, I'm bringing in a certain set of skills, but I know I'm not going to have every skill, and things change so quickly. I'm going to need some different skill sets. So I'm totally open to learning new things and doing what I need to do of what's right to drive the business. Because it's not all about what I need. It's about what the business needs.
Thank you for sharing that.
I think that's extremely relatable just for IOs in general. I think when, at least for myself, when I first graduated and I started applying for jobs, I was using all the terminology we use in the classroom, all the things that I read on the SIOPS website or heard other people in the academic field talking about. Outside of IOs, some people don't really care about understanding all the theories that go into organizational development. They just care to know, is my department doing what it needs to do? And if not, how do I fix it?
Explain it in a nice and concise report or presentation.
When we look at people applying for jobs, the idea of saying, well, I can do 60% of this job description, and I'm learning the rest on the way, and it's going to be fine. I'll Google it the day before the interview, I think is...
Well, that's where we can have a conversation about skills as well, right? So you've got people that can report their skills on their resume and on LinkedIn, and that's really like a folksonomy, right? That's more subjective versus like a real taxonomy. This is really an interesting part. So that's part of the reason my business partner, Diana Thomas, and I wrote the book, Be More Strategic in Business, is that exact facet of thinking and communicating tactically versus strategically in the corporate world. Because right when you get out of academia, you tend to be more tactical, right? Because that's how we work. That's how we're trained. I was trained as a researcher, and I was really trained to dig down into the weeds. I wasn't so much trained to look at the big picture. It was really a challenge for me to do that. And what you realize, you have to have the skill set to toggle between the two. There's times to be strategic and there are times to be tactical. You have to be smart enough to know when to do both and to be able to do both at the right time. And we talk about that in our book.
And without giving away too much, because I'm not asking you to give away all the secrets in your book, but can you define for our listenership the difference that you see between strategy and tactics?
So here's what we did in the book. And by the way, Diana, my business partner, was a chief learning officer of McDonald's Corporation for like 30 years. And so she and I partnered together to write the book. So she started at 16 years old in a McDonald's restaurant in Washington, D.C., and recently retired, and worked her way all the way up from working in a restaurant to being the chief learning officer at McDonald's. So she went from, talk about tactical 16-year-old, right, all the way to a senior executive for many years at McDonald's. And my experience is a little different. I didn't stay with one company for 30 years. I've been with a bunch of different companies, right? And helping them build out their learning strategy. But what's interesting is, so we put in the book two characters. We call her Tactical Taylor and Strategic Sam. So we give you these scenarios and say, for instance, you meet the CEO in an elevator. What does Taylor talk to the CEO about? And then what does Sam talk to the CEO about? Right? Taylor might say, the CEO says, hi, Taylor, how are you? And she may say, oh, I'm really tired. I need to get a Starbucks. We worked on that project really late. last night, so I haven't been able to think about how I'm doing yet. You know, that's what Taylor will say. Sam would say something like, hey, remember that project you greenlighted last week? We are well on our way to meeting those deadlines, and the client actually wants to sign a little earlier. So that's focusing on what's important to that listener. He's interested in results and numbers and the outcomes, right? And Taylor's focusing on the tactics of it, the project planning and that kind of stuff, and about being tired. And when Sam's in the elevator with that CEO, the CEO will say, Sam, you know what? That's great. Why don't you make an appointment with me and come to my office next week and let follow up with me about how that project's going, right? So that's how you show up strategically at the right time. And one thing you have to remember too, when you're working with executives, you might work with them once and might not see them again for another year or two. So that first impression you make with them is what will stick. So they'll figure out what skills you have, who you are, how you communicate in that one interaction. So that's why communication and, you know, highlighting your right skill set, your communication skills and leadership skills at that time is very important.
At our university, sometimes we would run into our president in the elevator. And I remember always thinking, like, what do we even say? President Ali, like, is it okay to ask about his day? Was today a board of trustees meeting? Maybe we just want to give him a second on his way to lunch break. You know, it's always definitely something that it can be very challenging to think like, okay, what do I say? I have your attention for the next three floors. And then you're on to the next thing.
Well, and that's why it's important you ask the question about, you know, when or how to be strategic versus tactical. If you know your business, you know, you stay abreast of your business. If you're in a public company, read your annual report, know what's going on in your business. If you're at a university or in academia, know what's going on in school, what's really important. Stay abreast of all that, because those hot topics that may not be in your field, you should be able to address and talk to, because it's in your sphere of influence, right? So you really should be aware of all that and be able to talk to the president about how we're handling COVID vaccines. Maybe that's a hot topic, right? So you're prepared to have any of those conversations.
We're switching the topic a little bit. We've read that all US-based publicly traded companies have to now report the material value of their human capital. So can we talk a little about human capital disclosures, implications for DEI?
Yeah, this is really interesting. So in November of 2020, the Securities and Exchange Commission passed a law that all public companies have to report the material value of their human capital. So what that means is, and they made it principles-based, not rules-based. So there weren't really rules, like you have to report certain numbers each quarter. It said, we want you to talk about each public company in their annual report, in their 10K, they need to talk about three areas around human capital. They need to talk about how they're acquiring talent, how they're developing talent, and how they're retaining talent. So this part about virtual learning trend, it applies there because the development part, right? How they're developing their talent. These companies are now responsible for disclosing how they're attracting, developing, and retaining people. And to me, this is a really good move, because as an employee, right, and you're looking to go somewhere, you know, you want to hire, let's say you want to go to Best Buy, a public company. You're like, oh, I think I want to go get a job there. What you would do is go look at their annual report, go read their human capital disclosure statement. How do they treat their employees? How do they report they're treating their employees? They'll talk about training. They'll talk about their learning programs. They're going to talk about how they acquire new talent and that process. And they'll talk about how they are retaining people and see if that's something that's important to you. If you have a bachelor's degree and you want to get a master's, maybe you see if they have some tuition reimbursement program, right? Or your creator, right? We've got a creator economy going now. Maybe you want to be sure there's projects, jobs, and gigs out there, you know, in that company for you to go around and, you know, get experience in different parts of the company. Then that should all be disclosed now in their annual report. So if you are an investor and you're looking to invest in a company, or you're an employee and you're looking to work for a company, or you're an existing employee in a company, you can go read your annual report and see how they state publicly they're treating their human capital. So I think it's fantastic news, and you're going to see a lot of investments in human capital management soon. So how everybody's training their employees, right, back to this top 10 trend, of virtual learning, the processes that they're using to train and upskill and reskill their employees will now need to be outlined in their annual report.
I think that's going to be very, very amazing, especially for those listening to us who are completing their bachelor's, maybe completing their grad school. Yeah, like looking for jobs, these somewhat levels the playing field among those that could be like, well, you know, my cousin's second best friend from kindergarten works there, so I got to get a little bit of insider look. It doesn't rely anymore on that network as much or on those personal connections, but anyone who wants to have that kind of information before applying can have it.
Yeah, being able to have that insider look with just a Google search, knowing how they train their employees, how they manage their human capital. Do you want to interview for them? Do you want to work for them?
And we can bypass a little bit of the chit-chat and network events. Like, of course, we have a great culture. We are like one big family.
Yeah, that's a great point, because they can say, oh, we won, you know, Working Mothers of the Year or LGBTQ plus, you know, supporters. Well, let's see if that aligns to what they're saying in their 10K, because now they have to disclose it. And they have to write more about diversity as well.
What type of family? There's many types of families.
Hey, every family is dysfunctional, right? In some way.
Do you think this might have any blowback? In your Q2 report, you mentioned that so far it's only been effective since fall 2020. So definitely we're still getting used to it. But could there be any chance for adverse impact or negative impacts on the organization from this?
Well, here's what we're seeing, right? Part of the issue is that since they made it principles-based, they didn't make it rules-based. They didn't say you have to report exactly how you're training your people. Are you using virtual learning? Do you use AR, you know, VR? It's not that. It's like it's principles-based. So you just have to say, here, you know, kind of almost narrative, you tell a story. Here's how we're acquiring people. Here's how we're retaining people. Here's how we're, you know, developing people. And so, as you can imagine, the first report started coming in and the responses were all over the board, right? Some people were saying, you know, we're providing a lot of detail, and some people were being very vague. And the thing is, when a company reports in their human capital disclosure statement, they can't change it quarter to quarter. They can't say, oh, we don't like what we said first quarter, let's change it second quarter. They have to clearly state how their strategy changed and why they changed their recruitment or retention strategy.
Mentioned, it sounds like right now, even just to compare two companies sounds a little bit like comparing apples and oranges.
That's right. That's a problem. Right? That's part of the problem. Better.
That is annoying, and it definitely needs to get standardized. Now, in our previous episode, we asked our audience to send us questions about virtual learning that we've shared with you. And do you have any suggestions or answers for them?
Yeah. So the idea is the learning curve, right? We all have it. And as long as we all have a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset, then we have a learning curve, right? So that's important. And I think there's some best practices out there. There are definitely some good books. So if anyone's read the book, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, that's a really good book. And the great thing now is there's so much learning out there that's available that you don't have to pay for, right? You've got YouTube, Audible you do have to pay for, but you've got a lot of audio books, you've got podcasts. I don't know how many of the listeners are into Clubhouse, but I have a Clubhouse addiction and I'm on there all day, every day, because my passion, you know, in my personal time is Bitcoin. So I learn all I can every day about Bitcoin. So it's kind of my thing, but I realize there are books, there's so many free materials out there you can learn. So, you know, one thing that I've heard, you know, I've been in the L&D space for 25 years and people always say, well, I don't have time for this training program. You know, I've got a personal life. I've got a busy job. I've got kids. I've got all this and that. But when you think about it, I don't really accept that excuse of time, because it's more about intellectual curiosity, right? Because when you're interested about something, you find the time for it. And you want to learn and grow, you find the time. It appears. You make the time for it.
To follow up on that motivation you just spoke about, how do we not procrastinate?
Again, it's more that strategic thinking, right? Strategic thinking like for yourself, What are your goals? What do you want to accomplish, right? And we all know, like, I think it's like human nature to procrastinate, right? So a lot of people don't prepare for anything or learn something until right before they have to learn it. And I get that, right? If it's not something you have a super passion about and it's not your hobby, then you're going to learn it at the last minute. And I think that's okay, because some of us, you know, we need the pressure to be able to learn it at that time. So I think the motivation is, one, can be a time factor, right? If you have to learn something quick, you'll prioritize it and you'll learn it. And I think that people overthink it sometimes and worry about what they need to learn. And I think if you're just more aware of your environment, especially like when you're at work, right? If you see there's a topic that people are talking about and maybe you don't know a lot about it, just use your normal intellectual curiosity and go research it. And then you find yourself that you're not behind, right? And I'm sure all the people in your audience already have intellectual curiosity, right? I mean, that's why they're there, you know? So I don't think that's really a problem. And I think if you think it's important, you will find time to do it.
One of the things you mentioned was compliance trainings and how very often they're virtual. A lot of companies will outsource them. And I'm a little bit biased here myself. One of my four jobs at this point, gig economy, is with a company that provides business simulations in a gamified mode for either business students or for corporate trainings. And so I'm curious to hear your take on gamification of trainings, because I feel like sometimes it can be very useful. But lately, it seems like a lot of trainings are moving towards gamification, and I just wanted to hear your take on it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question, too, because I think that as we evolve, and specifically as we see the learning industry evolve, more of these vendors, like I've been on the vendor side for 25 years, we are moving more towards gamification, and that's because the learners are demanding it. Right? We're seeing where they're interested in and what they want to do and what keeps them motivated. And so the part that's great about the gamification is, one, there's a little bit of competition in there, or a lot of competition, right? So it's the competition, it's the fun part of it. And our platform at EdCast, we have what's called skill coins. So you want to talk about like kind of a cryptocurrency, you can use skill coins to reward people for completing certain programs, or let's say, Claudia, you complete a PDF, a template that you think I might be interested in, you can charge me one skill coin to use your template, right? And so then I can pay you a skill coin. You've got more coins then to go buy more training solutions that you want. Maybe your goal is to acquire 10, so then you can go take an instructor-led training session on business intelligence or something. Right. So you use skilling as a form of gamification.
I like the idea of the knowledge Bitcoin on learning platforms. I recently underwent ID and email security training, a very simple onboarding standard training, but it had I think it was Savvy Sam that taught us how to not click on certain links or click on other links and how to report them.
Now, Dr. Boyle, we always like to give our guest the opportunity to step up on the soapbox. Anything we're missing or something you really want our listeners to know?
Is I want you to always, always be more strategic in your job, in your business. Understand what you want to accomplish. Understand where you want to go. And your vision for yourself may be fuzzy. It may not be clear. But if you understand where you want to go, then you'll make smart decisions and you'll get where you want to. And that might require some training, some additional learning. It might require obtaining better, you know, emotional intelligence like I had to do. So I just think keep focused on the big picture of what you want to accomplish and you'll get there. And you'll enjoy the ride. Just enjoy the ride. Remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Just before you go, we want to talk about your book. Where can people find it? Tell us more.
Oh, great. Yes. My book, again, I wrote it with Diana Thomas, the former chief learning officer of McDonald's. It's on Amazon. We've got Audible and, you know, paperback and hardcover versions. Again, it's called Be More Strategic in Business, how to win through stronger leadership and smarter decision making. And like I said, we've got two characters in there, Tactical Taylor, Strategic Sam. At the front end, we've got some best practices, some templates that you can use. And I've also built out a strategic thinking framework called an impact blueprint. And I invite all the listeners to go to our website, bemorestrategicinbusiness.com, and you can download some of the free resources. Just go through our wall there and put your email in, and then you can download the free resources that we have for you. And feel free to share those with your peers.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
We love access to knowledge. So thank you so much for making this free. And who do you recommend this book to?
You know, even though it sounds like a business book, right? How to be more strategic in business. The content is really focused on the learning and development space. So anybody in the corporate world or even academia, it's a good solution for. And it's a good gift for somebody who's new in their career, or, you know, somebody that was like me that got a poor performance review and was like, how do I fix this? Nobody can tell me how to do this. And I need to be more strategic, and I don't know how to be more strategic. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, we give you good examples in that book of what it looks like, because it's not so easy to understand in real life.
Well, Dr. Boyle, thank you so much for your time on our microphones. Thank you for volunteering with SIOP and representing us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to speaking to you guys again.
Well, everyone, that was trend number 10 for the Smarter Workplace Awareness Month. We talked about virtual learning, skilling, human capital, disclosure, lots and lots of things. So we are now at the point of the episode where I give my little spiel. If you would like to connect with us, talk with us, send us any questions for the upcoming Trend Champions.
Up next, we have Dr. Gordon Curfee. He is the Trend Champion for Team Effectiveness across virtual and disruptive environments.
Feel free to give us a DM, send us a voice note, or contact us through email at biascheckin on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, biascheckin podcast on anchor.fm, or biascheckin@gmail.com.
See you in the next one. Bye.
Bye, everyone.